What was attractive about communism?
In Poland or in general?
In Poland.
In Poland. The communism has never become in Poland a phase of majority, of course. Communism appeared in Poland as a communist power appeared in Poland as a something imposed from outside, of course. For well-known historical reasons, there was a deeply felt resentment against Russia in Poland. All the same, it would be wrong to say that communism had no support whatever. No, this would be wrong. The Communist Party, which existed before the war, had never become a great force in political life. It was illegal for that matter. Nevertheless, it did exist, and it had some influence in unions and some cultural influence as well. So there was something like a communist milieu before the war, minoritarian, of course.
And what was it that was appealing about it to people?
Well, I think that before the war, first of all, there were some utopian hopes common among intellectuals about communism and Marxism being a perfect solution for all human predicaments, promising the conflictless and perfect society, justice, freedom, equality, and so on. this utopian hopes, they worked more or less efficiently all over the world. Nevertheless, it was an appeal which mainly was limited to intellectuals. Otherwise, there was a disillusionment with various sides of life in democratic countries about the inability of democracy to cope with various social disasters, especially during the years of the Great Crisis. Then the coming to power of Nazis in Germany and the fear of Nazism, all those factors combined gave communism a certain appeal. But as I say, it has never become a major political force in Poland before the war, and in fact the Polish Communist Party was dissolved by Stalin's order in 1938, and most of its leaders were murdered in the Soviet Union. After the war, however, the situation was different. In spite of the fact that Poland was the first victim of the Nazi-Soviet alliance and was partitioned, was invaded by the Allied Nazi and Soviet armies and partitioned between these two countries and declared non-existent. In spite of the innumerable persecutions which the Polish population suffered in 1939-40 in parties in eastern parts of the country annexed by the Soviet Union, in spite of that, the horrors of German occupation in Poland were such that the arrival of the Red Army in Poland was, in a way, a liberation. I mean, nothing could be worse than the German and the Nazi occupation of Poland. It was an unending series of unspeakable horrors.
How much support did the communist Polish communists actually have after the period of liberation was over?
After the period of liberation, the Communist Party was small, and obviously it represented only a small part of the population. Nevertheless, one cannot fairly say that it was just an occupation force having no support whatever. No. It had some support among intellectuals, among intelligentsia and workers. However small it was real. The Socialist Party, which was reconstituted as an independent party after the war, had a much larger following. And still larger was the following of the Peasants' Party, led by Mikołajczyk, who came back from London.
I was going to ask you about this. How did the Communist Party actually eliminate these other parties?
Well, there were some, during the first years after the war, I mean 45, 48, there were some elements of genuine pluralism in Poland, both in political and in cultural life. Nevertheless, from the very beginning, the Communist Party had in its hands the main instruments of coercion, of violence, and of repression. They had in their hands police, army, education, and well, it was enough to either destroy or absorb other parties.
How did the communists use organizations like the police to neutralize the other political parties?
Well, as I said, the Communist Party from the very beginning kept in its hands all the instruments of coercion and repression, police, army, education as well. And it was enough to implement the plan of eliminating all competing political forces. First of all, they eliminated the Peasant Party, which had a very large following in Poland, by all sorts of pressures, by arrests and killing as well. On some occasions, threats, intimidation, police infiltration, and so on. They broke it up, and what remained was a pseudo peasant party, which exists until now, for that matter, but which is nothing more but an instrument of the Communist Party. It was somewhat different with the Socialist Party, which had a very long tradition in Poland and a large following. It was destroyed under the disguise of unification, again with all kinds of tricks and large infiltration of communist agents and so on. The ultimate act of the so-called unification took place in December 1948. It was, mind you, after the fraudulent election at the beginning of 1947, which ultimately sealed the fate of Poland for the coming years.
What in the area as a whole in Eastern Europe, what was the tension between the idea of Moscow-controlled, centered communism and national communism, based on national communist parties and leaderships?
It is fair to say that among communist leaders there were different people. Some were simply Soviet agents and nothing more. Others, however, probably believed at the beginning that they could build a socialist country in alliance, of course, with the Soviet Union and taking and using the example of the Soviet Union, but nevertheless being largely independent. If they had such illusions, they were dispersed very quickly. During the worst period, which means between 1949 and 54, there was a very strong pressure, absolutely to fashion Poland, other so-called people democracies, according to the Soviet model in all areas. Of course, this process has never been completed, but the pressure was very strong. So in this period, those differences could not really come onto the surface of life. But later on, with the gradual relaxation at a certain and growing pressure from below, those differences among communists again became visible.
And a certain communist nationalism?
Yes, and I think that among old communists there was a carefully concealed but real resentment against Stalin, who destroyed the Polish Communist Party and murdered most of its leaders.
In the worst period, the Stalinist high tide, how did Stalin actually exercise his power over the national leaderships in communist Europe?
Well, I don't think he needed. Let's go back to the beginning.
Okay,
First of all, there were many Soviet people in direct command in Poland. After all, the commander-in-chief of the Polish army was General Rokossovsky, the Soviet officer of Polish origin, of course, but who spent most of his life in the Soviet Union, including imprisonment, and he was a Soviet officer. There were many Soviet officers on high echelons of the Polish army. There were the so-called Soviet advisors in the security police who were responsible for the worst atrocities committed in this period. They controlled more or less directly all the important areas of life. So, but otherwise, they didn't need to fear the disloyalty of leaders. Polish leaders were rather obedient to Stalin. The story of Gomulka's fall and imprisonment is not, as you know, is not exceptional by standard of the East European countries in this period. Gomulka certainly did not want to be disloyal to the Soviet Union. Nevertheless, he probably was thinking about a Polish communist being less dependent on Moscow than Stalin might have wished it.
I was going to ask you that. To what extent was Stalin's idea that these countries got too independent very quickly? I mean, what was the purpose behind Stalin's engineer of the show trials in these countries, the arrest of many Communist Party leaders and so on in these different nations? What was the purpose behind
it? You see, for some short period, Stalin had to pay lip service to Yalta Agreement, included the multi-party system in all those countries and democratic elections and so on. Some proviso being made, however, for the fact that in Yalta Agreement it was said that only democratic parties should take part in the electoral process, which practically it amounted to that President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill appointed Stalin an expert on deciding which party is democratic and which is not. And inevitably it turned out soon that there is only one democratic party, which is Communist Party. So this was So this liquidation of all independent forces took some time. It couldn't have been done overnight. Nevertheless, it was clear from the very beginning where the whole process was heading to. The destruction of Socialist Party occurred first in Eastern Germany in 1946, and other countries, Poland, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, soon followed. There is no doubt about it that it was from the very beginning, it was a plan to eliminate all non-communist parties and elements of pluralism in political and cultural life.
But when this was done, why did then Stalin then take the next step of breaking up some of the Communist Party leaderships and so on?
Stalin was extremely suspicious of everybody, including his closest collaborators. His entire rule all over this quarter of century consisted, among other things, in periodic purges and massacres in order to eliminate not the actual opposition but the potential opposition. He wanted to keep all his instruments of power in the state of constant flux and uncertainty. So nobody was really safe under Stalin. But what was the major cause was of his suspicion after 48 was, of course, Tito's affair and the effective getting out of Yugoslavia from the Soviet bloc. So all people who might have been even slightly suspect of sharing so-called Titoist idea, which means of thinking about the country less dependent on Moscow, had to be eliminated. I don't think that all those people who were murdered after the short trials in Czechoslovakia or Hungary or Bulgaria were in fact Titoists, or that they were in fact did want full sovereignty for their countries. This would be anyway impossible. But some of them might have thought about being a little bit more independent, and some others were simply appointed criminals or Titoists according to unknown criteria by Stalin and its police. In Poland, there was no short trials of this kind, as you know.
To what extent did the establishment of communist rule also establish a new class?
I think it is quite plausible to speak about a new class of rulers and exploiters in all communist countries. This was, of course, a process which lasted some time, but that we can speak of a new class. I have a new privileged class, I have no doubt. It is, in fact, the class oppression is much worse than in any than it has ever been in capitalist societies, because it is a class which concentrates economic, political, and ideological power in their hands. So such a concentration of power is unknown in history. And it is certain that those people are very well aware of their privileged position and interested in the indefinite duration of this oppressive regime.
How has the idea and practice of the leading role of the party changed, evolve from the Stalinist period to the present day?
Ideologically, it didn't change at all. Leading role of the party is a euphemism which means total control by the party of all areas of life. Now, it turned out that this total control is in fact impossible and in some areas counterproductive. So after Stalin's death, some concessions have been made, but in very limited areas. For instance, under Stalin, even natural sciences had to be ideologically ruled. But it led to such absurdities, and it turned out to be so counterproductive that this kind of control practically ended. In other, as you might know, the control was so grotesquely detailed that it was an ideological problem whether narrower or larger trousers should be worn by people. I mean, clothing fashions were ideologically controlled as well. Now, this was largely given up in the meantime. So we cannot, and apart from that, there are many areas of life in which control is practically impossible. Various private relationships between people and so on. Even so, in this area, pressure was strong. In some countries, not in Poland, but for instance in China, there was an extremely strong pressure on the destruction of family, much stronger than in the Soviet Union, let alone, say, in Poland. The essence of communism consists precisely in that, total control, total ownership of people by the state.
What is left of this control now?
Well, this control was, abandoned in some areas. Nevertheless, the idea of total control has never been given up in ideological terms. It's still the principle that the party should exert as large control as possible. If under duress it had to give up some very limited areas of life, it doesn't mean that it gave up crucial instruments of power, economic, political, military, and police control of society. In this sense, Stalin's ideology is still in force, even so its implementation is much less efficient than it used to be.
If, as many people even in communist Europe say, the ideology of Marxism-Leninism is dead, no one believes in Marxism-Leninism anymore, why is the ideology still officially proclaimed? What's its function now?
This ideology is dead in the sense that neither the ruled nor the rulers take it seriously any longer. Nevertheless, it is still necessary because it is the only principle, only instrument of the legitimacy of power. No system can survive without a principle of legitimacy. Short of free elections or, say, the inheritance of monarchic charisma, the only way of legitimizing the power is ideology.
How is that? Well, how does ideology legitimate communist power?
Because it says that that the ruling party is embodies the aspirations and the will of the entire nation, of the entire population, even if this population, because of its backwardness, is not aware of its own aspirations, and as such, being a vanguard of the society, it has the automatic right to rule the society. Well, grotesque as it might appear, you have to keep these appearances of ideology, no matter whether anybody believes in it, in order to give the legitimacy principle alive.
What is left, in your view, of Stalinism in Eastern Europe today?
Stalinism is alive and well. And of course, many things have changed since Stalin's death, and obviously some of those changes are of great importance for the life of the population. Of course, we have no mass terror. The terror is selective all over those countries, including the Soviet Union. Of course, the cultural life is under less pressure than it used to be, even in the Soviet Union, let alone in Poland. Of course, some some rationalizations was introduced into economy, but only to a small extent. But the principle of Stalinist rule itself has not been abolished. The principle that it is the party which has the right of total control and which has to decide about everything. And the party is, in principle, an ideological organism.
How far can communist systems go down the route towards democracy?
The expression democratic communism has as much sense as dry water. If democracy means anything, it involves, of course, a competition of different independent forces in social and political life. Democratic communism would simply be no communism any longer. That is, it's as simple as that. There is not even a slight beginning of the road toward democracy in communist countries, including the celebrated reforms by Gorbachev. What he wants to do is, of course, to take out the country of the road toward economic decline, to improve efficiency without paying political price. For those, and therefore, I think those reforms are very unlikely to succeed, whatever his intentions might be. In the Soviet Union, they might have given some more room for cultural expression or lift some prohibitions in cultural life, but it doesn't mean that they abandoned the idea of total control. They decide what is allowed and what is permissible or is not permissible in cultural life. They're still very well in command, and there are no signs whatever that they would be ready to tolerate independent forces either in culture or in political life. In Poland, the situation is different to the extent that a very strong social pressure extorted from the ruling apparatus some concessions. Even after the, we are now 6 years after the imposition, almost 6 years after the imposition of the so-called martial law or lawlessness, military dictatorship in Poland in December 1981, in spite of the martial law, of the dissolution in legal terms of Solidarity and of many other independent associations, Poland is now, by communist standard, by far the most tolerant country in the Soviet Empire. Nevertheless, it is the result of the fact that the party simply has no means to exert the all-embracing control that it cannot dominate the society. It has to tolerate, however grudgingly, what it cannot destroy.
What do you think Gorbachev will mean for the countries of Eastern Europe?
The same what all his predecessors meant, which means the control as it used to be. There are no signs whatsoever that the Soviets would be willing or ready to relax the political or military control of other formally independent East European countries.
What does Gorbachev's rule of the Soviet Union mean for the future of Eastern Europe?
I don't think that Gorbachev's intentions concerning East European formally independent countries differ in any sense from that of all his predecessors. I don't think that there are any signs whatsoever that the new Soviet equipe would be willing or ready to relax their grip of those countries or give them more room for independence. After all, the imperial idea is very much alive as it used to be.
In the past, people thought that a certain measure of liberation for the people of communist Europe could come through their gradual prosperity of these countries. But now that economic advancement seems to be faltering there, do you think that liberation for the people there can only come through decay?
I would say that there is no automatic transition either from economic decay or from economic advancement toward liberation is the wrong word, toward a more humane regime. I think that historically we cannot make such claims. After all, both backward and advanced countries might, as we know from history, fall prey of totalitarianism. Whether economic improvement, very unlikely in the present conditions, or economic decay will actually result in new development toward a better social form. It depends entirely on whether or not it will be translated into social forces and political forces operating independently in those countries. And this is something that depends on very many factors, and not only on economic prosperity or otherwise.
Do you see some of the so-called countercultures of Eastern Europe, such as the Catholic Church in Poland, such as groups of writers, such as people taking part in private economic activity, do you see these countercultures as growing in strength and perhaps being able to challenge and change the nature of communist rule?
It's very strange to call a Catholic Church a counterculture. It is a culture of the entire population. So what is a counterculture could be perhaps only the official culture, which is nothing more than anti-culture. Otherwise, whatever interesting appears in not only in Poland, but all over the communist world, whatever interesting appears in culture is invariably against the regime, or at least indifferent to the regime.
Do you see these cultures becoming strong enough to actually change the nature of communist rule?
There is a difference between Soviet Union and Soviet-dominated countries of Eastern Europe. In Poland, in spite of the fact that there is a class interested in the infinite extension of this regime, communism in independent Poland would collapse overnight. And the same in Czechoslovakia or Hungary. However, in the Soviet Union, it is kept in force by internal forces alone. So it is a different situation. And this was a country which for seven decades by now have been under such a strong pressure, such a brutal in such brutal conditions that it's very difficult for people to get out of this conditioning, so to say. Nevertheless, as we know, there is an unofficial culture in the Soviet Union, in all areas of life, in literature and painting, to some extent in film as well, and above all in the general mood of the population. I'm not competent enough to say what are the chances of the Soviet people to get rid entirely of this Stalinist dirt. There are among people who are more competent than myself, there are very different opinions about it. Nevertheless, the fact is that communism has at least one point to its favor in the Soviet Union, which means the imperial glory.